Midway USA brand product designers have one straightforward goal: develop high-quality, technically sound products and deliver them to customers at reasonable prices. If you are immersed in the shooting sports industry and pay close attention to every single detail, you know our products are built right and stand up to everyday use. Who has shooting mats and range bag systems to hunting clothing and just about everything for the outdoors? Log on and shop 24/7 with super fast shipping. MidwayUSA.com. Knives, machetes, saws, and shears, multi-tools, shovels, swords, axes, spears, hatchets, and tomahawks. If it cuts, snips, slices, or chops, Midway USA has it. Find great gift ideas in our huge selection of pocket knives and other everyday carry folding knives. Make a statement or create a family legacy with one of our top-of-the-line hunting knives. We've got a great selection of manual and electric sharpeners, too. For just about everything for the outdoors, check out MidwayUSA.com.
Oh, here we go, boys.
Go.
Ooh, I love that sound. This is a good one.
Welcome to Waterfowl Wednesday edition of the Full Scale Outdoors. I'm Nick Johnson, and I'm being joined by none other than Dale Luganville from the South Dakota Prairies.
Yes, sir.
Dale, how's it going?
Good. I mean, it's, you know, just getting rolling. It's like the first, today is the first full week that I've been here.
What day did you get down there?
Yeah, I rolled in a week ago today. I rolled in and started setting spreads.
And how long have you guys been running clients for?
Since last Wednesday.
Since last Wednesday. So you're on day 7 of running clients. So tell me, how many of those days have you shot over 150 birds like they do on YouTube?
Zero. How many days have I shot double digits? One.
Okay. All right. Not bad.
Yeah.
I mean, we're at the very start of the battle.
Yeah, and it's just now getting better. So when I first got here, you know, it was all adults. And then there was one day there was like a mass exodus. And we're like, sweet, get out of here. Get out of here, be gone, stay gone. And then they showed back up. We're like, no, damn it.
So are you dealing with a situation where there's a lot of geese in your area?
There was a few days ago.
And that can make the hunting really difficult because it's difficult to pull birds off of the live birds.
I would say I had one morning. Conditions wise, I was like, well, this could be a really good day. I had a small feed literally set up on the opposite side of my field, which to the southeast, and then to the northwest, across the street, another feed set up. And I'm like, oh, we could get some bouncing back and forth. But each one of those feeds on their own, roaring on the ground for like 5-10 minutes, and they went up and left. And we got zero shots out of it. I was like, yeah. Well, that's silly. So
yes, sometimes the best hunting for those migrator spreads are when everything really does start to clear out a little later in the spring, and then the flocks that you do see are much more playful.
Yeah, I mean, we're seeing that now. So yesterday we got 10. We shot 4 adults in the morning, or 5 adults. My math is terrible. 5 adults in the morning, and then we shot 5 adults in the afternoon. This morning we had flocks working pretty good. We didn't see nearly the amount of birds around this morning, but they're giving us honest looks. So we had some missed opportunities and stuff like that, but yeah.
What area of South Dakota are you in?
Lake Preston.
I'm going to look it up right now.
We've got a couple big bodies of water. There's Lake Thompson, Lake Preston, like Twin Lakes.
Yeah, I gotcha.
Yeah, there's a bunch of bodies of water around.
I saw somebody on Facebook yesterday said they went down to Lake Thompson and checked over 300 dead geese from the avian flu die-off.
I heard something about that, yeah.
Have you considered maybe going down there and checking some legs yourself?
Not really. I don't really have time.
No time, no interest.
And really, and yeah,
kind of rotting corpses.
Well, it's not even so much no interest as I already know other people have interest. So what am I going to do? Wade through all the dead geese that somebody, like 4 other people, have already waded through? Like,
yeah,
It's like ag probably, hunting or collecting shells on the ocean. It's like, unless you're willing to be up at sunrise after a heavy storm to get the best shells or the best agates, it's like you're just wasting your time. And I'm just not that. It doesn't interest me that much to get a band off of a dead bird that I did not kill. So.
Right.
They can have it. I mean, whatever.
Just go through a bunch of diseased, rotting corpses on the shoreline.
Right. But honestly, I haven't really seen too much for sick birds. I mean, yeah, I had heard that, but.
Like, I think that die-off had happened on the fall, and you know, there seems to be, at least anecdotally, there seems to be some connection with, like, the cold snaps of the fall to the die-offs. Like, when it gets real cold real quick, you can have, like, a Lake Thompson-type event where you get the birds that die off. But, like, as far as, like, people just seeing sick birds in the landscape, I would say your observation is the most common I hear, is that people aren't seeing much for bird flu amongst the birds they're hunting. It seems to be these isolated events.
Yeah, and that might play here too, because we had a couple mornings where it got down pretty cold and probably some skim ice had formed over on some of the lakes and stuff like that, because most of the lakes out here are wide open almost already. So maybe that had something to do with it, if they're feeling a bit under weather and that was the thing that pushed them over. But when bird flu was like huge, however many years ago that was, and the very first bird, you want to say, harvested that season while setting up my spread, I never fired a shot. I just chased it down. He didn't have any broken legs, no broken wings. He just didn't want to fly. And when I got to him, and we saw this with other birds that we did shoot, because everything was decoying great that year, like they had a greenish, yellowish discharge coming out of like their mouth and out of their ass, and you could just tell they were sick. And I haven't seen any of that yet this year on birds that we killed. So
that's good.
Yeah.
What else have you been seeing for migration that's rolling through your area in the last week? Have you noticed any ducks or changing species of ducks as time has gone by?
A lot of ducks last night. Tons of ducks and specks migrated last night. Way more than we saw for... there's a few giants around. We'll see. Even today, we've seen like maybe four or five... let's just say like 8 to 12 at a time, big giants, mm-hmm. all kind of flying in a line. Yeah. And there's plenty of locals that are already staking claim to their areas too. They were here when I got here, but yeah, a lot of ducks last night, a lot of mallards, a lot of pintails. And then just today driving around at break time, I saw my first like small raft of divers.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Nice, dude. So yep. How
Now it's getting fun. The waterfowl show is starting to get fun now.
So did you miss it? Did you miss being back in the snow goose spread, or did you miss being in the snow goose spread, hanging out, telling the same jokes you always tell the clients?
I did. I actually do. It's got me thinking. It's like, all right, I need to figure out how to do this like all the time permanently. Like this is definitely my jam. I really enjoy it. And even just the people here in Lake Preston, like, they all know me by a first name basis down at the bar and stuff like that. Not that I'm a drunk, just a really nice guy. But they're like, oh, hey, we haven't seen you around in a few years. They're like, yeah, I'm back. So
that's nice.
Dude, it feels like a little home away from home kind of a scenario.
Remember for like 2 weeks we checked in with each other to see how much we were drinking?
Yeah.
That just reminded me of that.
Was that COVID?
What?
Was that the COVID time era? I don't remember.
That was like 8 weeks ago.
Oh, was it? Oh, well, yeah. I was
like
trying to find a good excuse
from Oklahoma.
For drinking.
Have you been drunk for 4 years, Dale?
I mean, define drunk. I mean,
well, you define drunk. Tell me how drunk you've been getting the last week.
They haven't been drunk at all. I think the most beers I've had in any one evening has been 3.
Like, I went into a liquor store with my dad on Sunday, and I wasn't really going to buy anything. But it was what's those big fancy liquor stores in the Minneapolis area?
Like Total Wine or MGM?
Total Wine. Total Wine. That's the one. So they have like this entire aisle of like single beers you can buy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So I was like, fuck, I should probably pick one out of here. But my dad, you know, he's getting, you know, his Merlot and his Miller Lite like he always gets.
Classy.
So he's up. He's done in like, yeah, he's done in like 2 seconds. So I just eeny, meeny, miny, moe down the beer aisle and grabbed one with my right hand and it was a double IPA. Yes. Now, I fucking hate IPAs, dude. Like, I do not like IPA. And this was a double IPA, and I was like, God damn it, dude.
You'll
but
like
you
it.
Can't go, you can't go against the, you know, the eeny, meeny, miny, mo. Dude, you gotta let fate just direct
right.
your life.
That's right.
You know what I'm saying? So I predictably poured half of it down the drain and then got late night diarrhea, as IPAs always fucking do, dude. God.
I thought
you
maybe
really,
the story...
Do you really like that fucking sewer water?
I do. And I really kind of thought the story was going to go a separate direction because really with a double IPA, the double only really... That's the word I'm looking for. Like, it has to do with the alcohol content, not like...
Yeah, it said like 8.8% on it.
Yeah, it has to be like 8.5 or above to be a double IPA. And what I've found with most double IPAs is they're actually less hoppy, much more smooth. They just fuck you up faster. So, I mean, I like IPAs, so it's possible that my opinion on that is screwed. But when I was first kind of training wheeling my way up into the beer snob world, I didn't like many IPAs. And the first time somebody gave me a double, I was like, well, why would I want it double hoppy? Like, that, it's going to be terrible. But it wasn't double hoppy. It was actually less. And it turns out I really kind of like them. But...
Well, you taught me something. I assume the same thing. I'm like, oh, great. I picked a double IPA. Since I fucking hate IPAs, I'm just going to hate this one more. When I still hated it. But I guess you are right. When I took my first sip of it, I was like, yeah, I guess I might be able to deal with this. Halfway through it, I was like, nah.
Nope.
Nah, fuck this. So there,
there might have been some placebo effect going on there, I wonder, like, because you're in your mind, you're like, I don't like IPAs.
I don't know, dude. Maybe I don't like IPAs because they're fucking gross.
Yeah, I mean, that's possible. I mean, not because they're gross, but just, you know, hey, listen, there's some people that like green peppers, and I don't understand that either, so I think they're vile.
Do you mess around with, like, Surly Furious?
Yeah.
You like that stuff?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. I definitely don't. I have always had a rule of thumb, like, now... IPAs started getting popular like, what, 10, 12 years ago or something, and your friends would always drag you to some fucking brewery, or you'd always end up like pulling a Surly Furious out of somebody's fridge or something because they offered it to you. And I have like one general rule. I have one diarrhea per IPA. So if I drink one Surly Furious, I have one diarrhea. And it might come that night or it might come the next day.
Sure.
If I have two Surly Furiouses, I have, or two IPAs, I have two diarrheas.
So you get a diarrhea event per beer that you drink, per IPA.
Per IPA, yes. And I don't know, dude. I can drink some brand.
That would be an interesting study.
Dude, I could fucking drink Four Loko and stuff. Like, I can walk into a gas station and drink the shittiest stuff they have, but... I can't drink IPAs. I don't know.
You must have a sensitivity to hops.
I don't know.
Because not all beer has hops. Like,
I feel like I have a sensitivity to overhyped dog shit beer.
You know, it's a necessary evil. Not to turn this into a beer podcast, but it was the IPAs that kind of started putting all these microbreweries on the, like, came popular and everybody was opening up their own microbrewery.
Right.
And that was at the time where, like, everybody was just trying to out-hop the next person. And while I do like IPAs and I like some hops, I don't like hops for the sake of just hop. And when they're basically, like, the equivalent of growing the hottest pepper you can, it's like, you can't actually eat that just because it's 100 million Schofields or whatever the hell it is. Like, it's not good. And that's what they were doing with IPAs. They were just like...
Yeah,
and I still believe that the biggest beer snobs were forcing it down and trying to play it off as that they were so cool in their skinny jeans and well manicured beard that they enjoyed it. It's like, there's no way you enjoy this. There's no way you enjoy this. It's too much.
I almost feel the same thing happened to like weed. Like, once weed became legal, like, I was listening to some comedian the other day that was like, when did weed become violent? when did that become a violent crime? Like, it is. It's just somebody else, same comedians. Like, I wanted my TV to be more entertaining. I didn't want to go to a different fucking realm.
So, yeah, but with that being said, then they got off of that. And then the creativity started flowing. They started making really good stouts and porters and all these different, you know, nut ales and even lagers and stuff like so, Hefeweizens. And then it just went, you know, and then where we are now, where there's just, you know, there's a brewery in every corner, which isn't necessarily a bad thing, but now some of them are starting to close down It's like, I think we've reached market saturation.
Yeah, I guess this did kind of turn into a beer podcast. That's fine.
Well, I mean, it's not
though.
That far removed from waterfowling, if we're being honest, although most people drink light beer. I'm the only one in this guidehouse that's not drinking Bud Light or Busch Light.
Seems kind of interesting, to bring her back to waterfowl. Today's March 12th. I saw some guys, shooting, Aleutian cackling geese, I think, in California, up to, 2 days ago. Which just makes me wish I would have gone somewhere, go. And the latest you can shoot dart geese in North America, according to the Migratory Bird Treaty Act, is March 10. So that happened to just fall on a Sunday this year. So you were seeing guys kind of on social media still out chasing specks and dart geese. And it's a lot of coastal, West Coast and East Coast will have special seasons that go that late. But popped up on my memories too on Snapchat, that 5 years ago I was hunting Canada geese in New York in early March. God, that was fun.
I remember that. That was pretty cool.
You're
doing Canada though, right?
I am.
Okay. When is that?
We'll be going April 5 through the 10.
Oh man, that's a ways out yet.
I know, right. And geese started arriving there yesterday.
Huh. Well, when I left, just as a migration report, when I left was it Monday? Yes, Monday. And I left town right there. The Pelican River flows out of the Pelican Lake, and there's a little dam. There's always some open water, and they're kind of warm. So even above the dam had some open water. And I saw my first golden eyes, which has to be the earliest I've ever seen them up there.
Dude, it's just absolutely incredible. Last year we did the Canada trip. And we were there April 5 through April 10. Actually, I was there, I think, April 3, because I had to get there before, an April 4 blizzard that was going through North Dakota and blocking all the roadways. April 5, I think I was stuck in an Airbnb in Canada with Carter Collins just because the blizzard went through North Dakota and then hit Manitoba that day, and there wasn't a goose to be hunted up there until April 7th. And now I don't think there's huntable numbers up there, but there probably will be within the next 5 to 7 days. But the amount of geese that are up there now, well, maybe not now, but in the next couple days are what we saw up there on April 7th last year. So they are. Now, maybe they were a week late last year, but they're definitely 2 weeks early this year.
Oh, is this primarily a band hunt that you're doing, if I remember right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll be going up to that Oak Hammock area and trying to target bands or just have a good time. I mean, the limit is 8 honkers per person. And it's not like we're going up there to, make giant piles of honkers.
Right, right, right.
And bring them... We're not interested in that.
That's just pretty cool, though, that you can hunt honkers that late, though. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, I was just going through my ammunition stockpile of TSS and heavy shot. Dude, I put together a 25-round box of ammo. A fucking box of ammo is worth $200.
Just for sniping bands.
Right, right.
Yeah, that TSS is not cheap.
Dude, I was just at Sportsman's Warehouse the other day. There's some boxes of it that are $80-some, $17 per shot shell. The turkey hunter stuff.
Yeah, the $50 box of the 5 that I bought when I was coming out in North Dakota last fall for swans, I had in my hands for a solid 15 minutes before I could finally walk to the register and be yep, I'm going to spend $50 for 5 shells.
But the TSS just... Holy crap, does that stuff wallop.
Dude, I'm a firm believer. I mean, I saw it with my own two eyes. It brought down a swan. That swan was not close. It was not close. It was 80 yards. It was all of 80 yards. And it was out.
You shot this swan?
Yeah.
I don't think I heard the story.
Pretty sure, but I mean, I'll tell it again. So, we're out there snow goose hunting and, duck hunting and whatever else. And three of us had swan tags. And just driving around, there wasn't much for swans out there. Everything had frozen up. There was a ton of snow when we went. It was the first week of November. And then we happened to pass this one lake that had a bunch of swans on it. that had open water, actually. We're like, okay, we'll keep that in mind. Maybe we'll come back. And we weren't really hunting anywhere near, super near that. It was like maybe 30, 40 minutes from where we were hunting. And then, so, you know, North Dakota has those days you can only hunt geese till sundown Wednesday and Saturday. So,
correct.
One,
yeah.
One of the mornings we did our snow goose
Does
hunt.
Does that apply to swans? Oh, no.
No, it doesn't apply to swans. But that one morning we did our snow goose shoot. And then my buddy Mike and I were like, well, let's head to, you know, let's grab the kayaks and go ahead, try to see what we can get for swans. Just pass shooting, you know. When this lake kind of set up cool. There's this kind of point that came out and a bunch of that tall, like, I don't know what that kind of weeds are. It's like really tall, has little feathery tops on it and stuff. Like, we were hiding in that and we're trying to pass shoot some ducks. And then we weren't even sitting there that long. And here comes this pair of swans. We're flying right at us. And then they started to veer off. And like I said, they were up their ways, and when they started to veer off, and I'm like, well, A, I wanted to just – I didn't know if we were going to get another opportunity. B, I wanted to see if the hype about this TSS was real. And then before that, I was just talking to a buddy of mine about some videos he was watching about when you're shooting long-range TSS, what most people don't take into account is the drop. Because it – like anything, even a rifle drops at a steady rate, you know, over distance.
Yeah.
So if you're straight up, your normal lead. But if you're shooting up and out, you have to adjust for a little bit of that drop. So when I pulled up on this swan, I swung through, and then I remembered that conversation. So I actually went up a little bit, held high. We let her rip, and this swan came down, and I had to chase it. It went across all the way across the lake and got up, started walking on the far side. It was a long paddle, but got to it. But it had, and so then I put a cheap shell in to finish it off. But when I got my hands on it and looked at it, its wing, one wing got hit with that TSS, and it was shattered. Now, you can imagine how big of a wing bone is on a swan. And it
was, what shot size were you using?
7.5.
Yeah, like 7, or I think it comes in 7 and 9.
Yeah, that's all they had. They had 7.5 and 9 at the store I was at.
Yeah.
And so I got the biggest you could get, but still 7.5, I was like, is that going to be big enough? You know? And so when I'm in the store, I had the box in my hand. I went online. I'm like, what's the proper TSS shot size for a swan? I didn't find anything, but I did find some turkey stuff, and people were sharing like pictures and that. And I saw the damage of a turkey. And I was like, well, 7.5 ought to be enough. And it was.
Yeah.
So I one shot, and I'm a firm believer. And so, yeah, is it $50 for 5? Yeah, but I'm not shooting a whole box. It's 10 bucks a year it's costing me if I hit, you know, like.
And I was just talking to my buddy Jeff Houston about Boss. I was just getting my ammunition ready, and he's bringing up a bunch of Boss. I'm bringing up a bunch of tungsten loads. And I said, does it worry you at all, you know, on a trophy hunt, that sometimes there's a tendency for bismuth to shatter? Like, sometimes it does, sometimes it doesn't. Does it worry you that shot shell you grab on that trophy bird is going to shatter when you shoot it? And he goes, dude, he's the same age as me. He 36, 37 years old. And he's like, man, I've been shooting cheap shot shells my entire freaking life. And I switched to Boss last year and shot Boss all season. And he goes, I shot half the amount of shot shells that I normally shoot. Like, when I'm shooting birds, like, even if one does kind of shatter here and there, there seems to be enough pellets in there that it, and he goes, and believe me, I was cleaning birds and I was finding, you know, those bursted pellets inside the meat here and there, and, you know, eating, you know, you kind of got to dissect them. But he's like, I know for a fact that shit crushes so much harder than steel. So I am not concerned about shooting it on a trophy hunt at all. I'm like, all right. And I respect his opinion like 100%. So it's kind of interesting. We were just having that discussion.
Yeah.
One weird thing too, I heard, you know, like you just said you shot 7 or 7.5 shot TSS. One concern I've heard from hunters, I think I've read online, is people concerned that, sure, the pellet has the energy to get through meat, get through breastbones, and shit, basically do pass-throughs of birds at like 70, 80 yards. But is the wound channel big enough, is what some people were worried about. Like, this tiny little pellet going through a body, is it going to bleed out if you – and Like that's cutting some hairs right there.
Yeah, but what they're not taking into account is just the kinetic energy. Like there's
right.
Like it's like getting punched really hard, you know?
Yes.
Sure,
yes,
maybe
yes,
it goes
yes.
through, but there's like catastrophic shock that happens from being just hit that hard.
Yeah, and any bone it touches just absolutely gets obliterated.
Yeah,
not
I
like
mean that
it cracked
again,
it.
That's what like the fact that I was able to just bring the bird down at that distance was impressive enough. But then when I opened it up and I saw what it did to that wing, I was like, holy crap. Like, it wasn't just broken. Dude, it was shattered. And I'm guessing only a couple BBs hit it at that distance, you know? So, yeah, there's – I mean, I'm sold. But
like, or maybe even just one BB, honestly.
Yeah, could have been. Could have been just one, you know?
You just put one lucky pellet on that.
It's very possible. Oh.
Very like, unlucky swan.
He was very because he was very much alive. You know, he hit he hit the water. You know,
was it an adult?
Yeah,
probably yep. like fucking 15 years old. Just
possibly
living the best.
Now his mate doesn't have a partner anymore because they breed for yeah. life. You know,
it's probably like living its best swan life ever, and then takes that one pellet from TSS. Like, god damn it.
Yeah, well, you know.
Hey, speaking of conservation season stuff, did you hear what Texas is considering doing next year to their conservation snow goose season?
I don't think so.
They're planning or considering eliminating it. Like
really?
Having no more conservation season in Texas. There's some weird stuff going on in Texas with snow geese. Like recently, within the last 2 or 3 years, they dropped their limit from 10 snow or 20 snow geese down to 10 snow geese.
During the spring order?
No, this is during fall.
Oh, during the fall.
Yeah, and their conservation order, gosh, I'm not going to say what their limit, I'm assuming they don't have a limit right now, but I could be incorrect about that, so I better not say. But so recently they dropped 20 birds to 10 in their regular season, while other states are going 20 birds to 50 that are in the same flyway, the central flyway, like the Dakotas and shit like that, Nebraska, or Kansas is a 50 bird limit in the fall, and now they're talking about dropping their regular season limit to from 10 to 5 and eliminating their spring conservation season.
What is their possible reasoning behind that?
I don't know, because there's less snow geese wintering. There's less snow geese wintering in Texas than really like ever before since they started counting them. I know they're like having a little freak out about that.
No,
but
yeah.
It's not like there's. It's not because there's less snow geese in
right.
the world. It's because there's more going to the Mississippi Alluvial Valley, like in Arkansas and Arkansas, Louisiana, Mississippi. They've just shifted east since all those rice fields and got drained and developed that were west of Houston.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask. I'm like, well, that's just because they're not there anymore. Like, are they that like short-sighted or not short-sighted, but just like... I mean, I know Texas is all about Texas, and it's the best state in the country. And if you don't believe me, just ask them. But, like, do they think that because there's few snows in Texas that there's just fewer snows? Like, they can't possibly think that.
I don't know if they think that or if here we are just speculating. It would be great to get a guy like to get some answers, like a guy from Texas to on the podcast or something and be like, okay, explain yourself on this shit.
Yeah. Cause
here you got the entire country going one way and you guys are not even like, I haven't heard any talk like even from like the East Coast, like where the greater snow goose population seems to be quite stabilized thanks to the conservation season. I don't see them talking about the elimination of it, or I haven't heard anything about that, but then you have one state in the central flyway that is now basically going the other way as every other state in the central flyway. They are doing the opposite. And I guess I'd like to hear the reasoning for that.
That is really peculiar. I'm going to have to go down that rabbit hole, see what I can find. Maybe I can find a Texas waterfowl specialist and just see where their head's at. Cause that just makes no sense at all.
Yeah. I know that they've had a guy from the Texas DNR or whatever on the Ducks Unlimited podcast several times talking about midwinter surveys, which is always super interesting coming from Texas too, just because of the goose dynamic and the wintering duck dynamic and how big Texas is. It's kind of a great little microcosm of duck ecology and goose ecology down there. But yeah, maybe we could snag him for a podcast. It'd be interesting to hear him out on that.
Yeah,
I mean, you kind of have a knee jerk to when you hear stuff like that, like what the fuck. But I know that Texas has a I found out about this because they have a they've got one of those surveys. They got one of those surveys asking for hunter opinions, and they've got a list of their proposed changes coming up, or the list of the proposed regulatory changes that are in the survey. So if you hunt Texas or know anybody who does, send a word out to fill that survey out.
Huh, that's crazy. I mean, I think it's doubly crazy because it's Texas, like the state where you can kill everything that isn't even from here.
Right.
if you own land and there are animals on your property, those are your animals. Like, weird. But yeah, maybe because you know why they hate them? Because you can't keep them in fences. That's why they hate them.
You can't high fence snow geese.
Exactly. That's what they're trying. So. They're trying to privatize the snow goose market. I wouldn't be surprised.
I don't know that this is true. I think they're trying to entice snow geese back to Texas.
So that's the first thing I thought. Not as a motivation, but now that you say that, that does actually fit like the Texas kind of motif. But my thought went, well, man, if they shut that down, I wonder if Texas is going to turn into some sort of like refuge and start drawing birds over. But they need the food. They need the food more than they need anything.
Right. And this whole drawdown of snow geese and to some degree speckle belly geese shiftward east didn't happen between like 2021 and 2022. I mean, this is a shift that's been ongoing for the last 30 to 50 years. Maybe it's been a little bit more rapid in the last 20 years, but it has been shifting as more rice agriculture turned into development along the coastal areas of Texas, and the Mississippi Alluvial Valley has just remained an agricultural rice kind of dominant superpower.
Yeah. Huh. Well, is there anything else? I got to head back to the field.
Nope, that'll do it, man.
Cool. All right, man. I'm glad we banged one out here. And we'll have to continue to do lunchtime ones, maybe.
Yeah, join us next week on What Beer Gives Nick Diarrhea. I'll do some experimentation. I'll have to go get some blueberry beers.
Another eeny, meeny, miny, moe. Just let me know how it pans out.
Some sour beers. We'll find out.
I'm not a big fan of those, but whatever. It is what it is. All right, dude. All right,
man.
Talk to you then.
Good luck.
Bye.
You want to succeed, you want to fish, you want to be
one of the greatest.
Tune in to West Marine's Life on the Water, presented by Costa Custom Boats, every Saturday night from 7 to 9 p.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV.
Through the Blackwater Bayous and in the dark Louisiana night floats a duck camp, alive with the sounds of swamp pop and the smells of Cajun cooking. Mississippi Delta and Venice to the Cajun prairies of the Southwest. Me and the Duck Camp Dinners crew will be hunting and eating it all.
This is Duck Camp Dinner.
Join me, Chef Jean-Paul Bourgeois, and the whole crew every Monday at 8 p.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV.